Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. I am delighted to welcome Dr. Holly Ordway to the show to speak about J.R.R. Tolkien. Holly is the Cardinal Francis George Professor of Faith and Culture at the Word on Fire Institute, as well as the Visiting Professor of Apologetics at Houston Christian University. She's written numerous books and articles about various members of the Inklings, but our focus today is Holly's newest book, which I've got right next to me, an absolutely fantastic spiritual biography of J.R.R. Tolkien called Tolkien's Faith, and I highly, highly recommend you get a copy of it. C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien are two of the most influential writers of the 20th century, so we're going to spend a little bit of time exploring their relationship and the impact that each man had on the other. And something you said in your wonderful book, Tolkien's Faith, Holly, I loved. You said their friendship was transformative for both men, and indeed, if they had never met, it is entirely possible that we would know nothing of either of them today. I mean, that's such an interesting thought, isn't it, that we might not know anything of either of them if they'd not met. But so let's talk about that. How did they meet each other?
So they met in 1926 when Tolkien came from his, he had academic post in Leeds, and he came to Oxford for his first professorial post at Pembroke College. He was based at Pembroke College and was the Rawlinson Bosworth Professor of Anglo-Saxon. So he comes in and he's a professor, he's a member of the English faculty, and he meets this chap, C.S. Lewis, who was at that time he's sort of doing philosophy and starting to get into English. And they met at a faculty meeting. And the interesting thing is that they didn't really hit it off all that well in the first meeting. Lewis went back afterwards and wrote in his diary that he had just met, you know, Tolkien. He's a smooth, pale, fluid little chap. No harm in him. Only needs a smack or so. Tolkien didn't make a great impression. But they quickly discovered that they had a lot of interests in common, and specifically that they both loved the medieval sagas. And Tolkien had started a club called the Kolbiters get together and to read old Norse sagas in the original Icelandic, as one does. And Lewis was enthusiastic about this and joined the club, and they discovered that they had an interest in writing. And then in a very pivotal moment, Tolkien shares with Lewis a draft poem that he's writing, the story of it's a poem that is a treatment of the Beren and Lúthien story. So this is a poem that's really the heart of the legendarium. It's really important to him. And he shares this with Lewis. And things could have gone very badly because Tolkien was very, very sensitive about his writing and easily hurt. And it's a real gesture of vulnerability that he lets Lewis see this. And Lewis responded perfectly in every possible way. First of all, he immediately says, I love reading it. I enjoyed it. This was so thrilling. I would have loved it even if it was by some random person, not by you who I know. And then he follows up by giving really detailed constructive criticism, but very cleverly, he doesn't just criticize it, which Tolkien might have been offended by, he makes a kind of a fun play in which he imagines that the poem is an ancient text with some disputed readings, and he creates these four persona of different academics who are arguing over the right reading of the lines. And so one of them says, for instance, oh, well, you know, line 9 is unworthy of the poet. It can possibly be the original. And it's the most amazing and delightful and fun way of approaching it. And it shows Lewis's sort of genius, his intuition for relationality, because it was the perfect way to reach Tolkien. And he ends up, Tolkien does end up using some of the criticism, though he never finished the poem, because Tolkien.
Classic.
No, seriously. But this really cements their friendship. And then they become good friends. And the interesting thing is, at that point, you know, Tolkien's a Catholic. Lewis is at that point an atheist. So they don't have a shared faith. They bond together out of friendship for these other shared interests. And then because they're friends, and because these are thoughtful, you know, men, they talk about these things. And then this becomes something else that develops their friendship, that they're able to talk about everything from literature to the Christian faith.
Well, let's talk about the Christian faith, because there was an incredibly significant moment in both of their lives in September 1931 around Addison's Walk. Would you just say a little bit about what happened there? Because that was a really, really important moment, particularly in Lewis's life, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Lewis and Tolkien had been having these conversations. So they'd been talking about Christianity, and all this while, Lewis is, you know, he's going on his own journey of faith. He talks about this in his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, where he's basically arriving by philosophical means at a belief in God. And he had arrived at believing that God exists, but he felt that he couldn't make that next step to believing Christianity. He couldn't reconcile this philosophical theism with this weird story of the incarnation and these doctrines about sacrifice, and he couldn't do it. And that's where he was. So at one point, this, you know, in September 1931, Tolkien, Lewis, and another friend, Hugo Dyson, who had come to visit, they all got together and they had this long conversation about, you know, the myths and, you know, and Christianity. And as a important part of this, they went for a walk as they're conversing on Addison's Walk, which is the circular path around the, you know, in the gardens of Magdalen College, where Lewis had his rooms. It's a beautiful, beautiful walk. And somehow in that time, that conversation with the beauty, you know, the wind blowing through the trees and loosening the leaves, there's a beauty there. And this seemed to have all connected up. And Tolkien especially was able to articulate to Lewis the idea that his rational mind and his imaginative minds didn't have to be opposed. And Lewis later said in a letter that what Tolkien and Dyson had both helped him to appreciate was that the ideas of sacrifice and redemption, and that he was attracted to those when he found them in a pagan story. It was just when he read them in Christianity that he was kind of cold. But they helped him see that really the two things intersect. He could both believe in it as doctrine and also respond to it imaginatively. And that helped him to drop those barriers and to realize, yes, this, I can accept this with, you know, sort of both hemispheres of my brain. Now, this was two friends, you know, Tolkien and Dyson. Tolkien followed this up by writing Lewis quite a long poem. And this poem is included in the collection Tree and Leaf, which you can get in the UK edition. And it's called, he writes the poem from philomythos to misomythos, from the lover of myths to the hater of myths. Because apparently one of the issues that Lewis had brought up in this conversation was the idea that, oh, myths are just lies. They're beautiful lies. They're breathed through silver, but they're still lies. And Tolkien says, no, no, no. They're stories, but they're also true. And he talks about the way in which stories can convey truth even while they're stories. And so although the three-way conversation kind of set it going, I think Tolkien then articulating this poem, this beautiful poem, kind of helps consolidate that. And it's amazing why we could spend an hour just talking about that poem. But I talk about it in Tolkien's Faith. And I think it's really interesting to note that in this poem, Tolkien is articulating some of the theme that Lewis would later pick up and develop in his own apologetics writings, particularly the idea of the myth made fact. So really we see this profound influence that Tolkien is showing Lewis before he's a Christian. Look, stories can be stories and also be true in a mythic way. Christianity happened in history, and it's a story that you can respond to as a story. And that was so important, not just for Lewis's own conversion, which it was, but also for kind of setting a mode of thinking that was profoundly influential. Because in Lewis's later apologetics writings, that becomes a really important theme, the idea of myth as a mode of truth. The myth made fact is a Lewis essay. And so that's something that Tolkien really contributed to in making effectively a theological argument for the importance of story.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight, and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for your support.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Well, I think it's obvious that Tolkien clearly really deeply impacted Lewis in that way. I mean, if we were to flip it, what impact did Lewis have on Tolkien?
Well, this, again, it's a two-way thing, and there are lots of influences. And one of them is, if you look at it sort of biographically, when I was researching Tolkien's Faith, I found that right before Tolkien came to Oxford and during the first couple of years at Oxford, he was at a real low ebb in his own faith. He had a stretch where he says, "I almost ceased to practice my religion." He didn't totally cease, but he almost ceased. Really a dry stretch for him. But it's right around the time of his friendship with Lewis that it is reinvigorated, and he ends up being a really active, serious Catholic the rest of his life. Well, I think there are lots of things go on there, and of course Tolkien himself would have said it's the providence of God, working, the Spirit works as the Spirit works. But one of the proximate causes, I think, was that here Tolkien was talking about his faith to someone who was intelligent and thoughtful, interested, and didn't agree with him. And so therefore, Tolkien who believed these things, even if he was sort of spiritually dry, he's forced to articulate, why do I believe in Christ? Why do I believe that the Gospels are a story that it really happened? And iron sharpens iron. And so in those conversations, even while he was helping Lewis to come to faith, Tolkien's own faith was being, I think, reinvigorated. And they end up sort of, having that back and forth, throughout their life. That later, Tolkien admits that Lewis helped him to reengage with the Bible more thoroughly again. So there's a dynamic where they're helping each other in their faith lives. And of course, literarily, they're also helping each other. I mean, for instance, Tolkien admits straight up that he would never have finished The Lord of the Rings, let alone published it, if it hadn't been for Lewis. Lewis just kept nagging him. When are you going to finish? When are you going to finish this story? Come on, come on, finish it. His ceaseless nagging was a major factor in finishing Lord of the Rings. And given how many things Tolkien started and didn't finish, it is absolutely believable that without Lewis, we would not have Lord of the Rings. I mean, I think this is a statement of fact. Had it not been for that friendship and for Lewis's believing in Tolkien, come on, Tollers, finish this book. We wouldn't have Lord of the Rings. But then Tolkien also repaid the favor other ways. For instance, when Lewis wrote Out of the Silent Planet, he showed the manuscript to Tolkien. Tolkien loved it and helped get it published. Mm. So they were really helping, encouraging each other as writers, as well as, you know, as men of faith. And yeah, I don't think it's an exaggeration that if they hadn't become friends, they would be both sort of academic footnotes somewhere, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, and it wasn't just the two of them, was it? Would you say, I mean, again, this is a whole series in and of itself, but would you say just a little bit about who the Inklings were and why they were so significant, not just the two of them?
Well, the Inklings were a group that sort of coalesced around Lewis and Tolkien, and they met typically twice a week. They met once, I think on Tuesdays it was, at the Bird and Baby, the Eagle and Child, just for drinks and conversation. And then they met on Thursdays at Lewis's rooms in Magdalen College to read their work in progress. They would take turns and read out loud, and they would discuss, and they would just have conversations about absolutely anything. And out of the Inklings as a whole, that too helped to foster, you know, this dynamic of encouragement and support and just having them be friends and have these interesting dynamic conversations. So yeah, that's a whole other dynamic. But it was part of that whole environment in which there was a lot of mutual support. And also sometimes problems, because even Hugo Dyson, who had been influential in helping, you know, Tolkien to, you know, help Lewis become Christian, later on Dyson became very anti-Catholic, and he began sniping at Tolkien whenever he read from the drafts of The Lord of the Rings. You know, oh no, not another elf, and that really hurt Tolkien, and he would just shut down. And so again, Lewis had to kind of encourage him, no, let's hear this. And so again, we have the importance of Lewis, because if that negativity from one of the other Inklings could easily have shut down Tolkien's creativity. He was very sensitive, but Lewis helped him get through that. So very interesting dynamic and very important, I think, for both of them to have this community.
Well, and obviously it wasn't just the friendship between the two men, it was the friendship within the Inklings, with other people in different circles. But why was friendship such an important theme for both Lewis and Tolkien in their writing? I mean, it sort of comes up time and time again. Obviously, it's like right at the heart of The Lord of the Rings. Friendship was just such an important thing for both men, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think this is really one of the things we can kind of learn from them, especially in our modern age. Friendship sometimes gets kind of short shrift. Like it can be harder to be friends. We need this kind of friendship. And I think, you know, to try and trace out why it was important to them is difficult. But certainly both of them, you know, had losses in their lives, had difficulties in their lives. And I think that they valued having the people who could share their interests. And both of them were very sociable. Tolkien, you know, was very extroverted. He liked people. Lewis was very sociable. So there's a real need in their lives. So, you know, to interact with people, to have these friendships. And it's interesting, you know, the Inklings were important to both of them. This is where they had a number of important friendships. But I think because in hindsight, we know how important the Inklings were as a group, we can somewhat overstate their place in Tolkien's life and in Lewis's life, as if that was their only social circle. And I think sometimes this can lead to some misconceptions, because the Inklings were all male group. And in that social era, that was much more normal to have single sex groupings. And we can sometimes mistakenly think that therefore all of Tolkien's friends were male. But in fact, he had lots of female friends. And he, indeed, and Lewis were members of a group that Tolkien helped to found. It was called The Cave. And it was a co-ed group. There were many women faculty members who were part of this. It was a literary society. And so he had other groups, lesser known to history. And of course, Lewis had the Socratic Club, you know, where he debated people, including like Elizabeth Anscombe. So there are lots of other groups in there who had an influence. So they were amazingly sociable people, fitting this in amongst all of their other work. But yeah, friendship was just really important to them. And perhaps even more so to Lewis, because Tolkien had family, you know, he had his wife, he had four children, and Tolkien was devoted to his children and really loved to spend time with them, which wasn't necessarily typical for men of his era, for him to spend as much time deliberately with his children as he did. But they do give us a really beautiful example of how important it is to have friends, have people who will, you know, just be with you through life. And I think that's something I find very admirable and really try to imitate.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.